Okay, today is January 30th, 2008. This is Fidencio Marbella with the Melrose Park Public Library in Illinois. Also present is Heidi Beasley, also of the Melrose Park Public Library. Today we'll be speaking with Glenn Curley of Melrose Park, Illinois. Glenn served in the Navy from 1970 through 1973 and participated in the Vietnam War and in three space recovery missions. This interview is being conducted for the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Glenn, why don't you tell us a little bit about when and where you were born, and tell us about your family and your siblings.
Well, I was born in Melrose Park, Westlake Hospital. My mother lived in Melrose Park as a little girl. And my father was born in Southern Illinois and moved up here. Of course, when he met my mother. And then I was born in Westlake. My brothers and sisters were all also born in Melrose Park in Westlake. And eventually we moved to Bellwood. Went to school in Bellwood and grammar school, and then on to high school and Proviso East High School.
Okay. You joined the Navy in 1970?
Yes, I decided to join the Navy. My brother was in the Navy for 3 years prior, and
he talked you into it?
No, he told me some pretty nice stories about how he saw the world, Japan and Singapore, and thought it might be a pretty good idea to join and experience some of that, okay. See the world, as they say.
What was the reaction like of your parents to joining the Navy?
They were very proud. My first cruise to when I got aboard ship, it was funny because I, in transit, getting my report to duty orders, I was ordered to report to the USS Berkeley, a destroyer out of California, and then I asked the chief, if there was any chance I could get brother duty aboard the USS Ticonderoga. And funny enough, he changed the orders on the spot, and I was off to San Diego and surprised my brother.
That's pretty nice of them to do that.
Yeah, it was. I was really surprised because, from what I'm told, you don't want to be in a destroyer in the Pacific Ocean. And so I reported to duty, and it was around August 1970, right out of high school.
Okay. Where did they send you after you enlisted?
Well, when I enlisted, they sent me to boot camp first, of course.
Okay. Where was that?
Great Lakes. And that was quite an experience. I was up at 5 o'clock every morning, and the sloppiest breakfast you want to eat, and then out to the training yard doing calisthenics and running and shooting and things they do in boot camp.
And how long was boot camp?
Boot camp was 9 weeks. 9 weeks, and then they shipped me off to San Francisco, Treasure Island, to wait my orders. That's when I got my orders to the USS Ticonderoga.
Okay. Now, had you ever been on a big ship before joining the Navy?
No, I haven't. Never been on a ship, period, other than a fishing boat.
What was your reaction like when you saw the Ticonderoga?
Well, when the taxi drove me up to Ticonderoga, I couldn't believe how huge the ship was. But in reality, it's a smaller class aircraft carrier. And our sister ship was the USS Coral Sea and Kitty Hawk, which dwarfed them. We were a crew of 4,500 fully loaded, and the Kitty Hawk Enterprise and Coral Sea were 6,000 strong. So I was pretty amazed.
Now, what was the Ticonderoga? It was an aircraft carrier?
Ticonderoga was commissioned in 1945, and her sister ship, this is a story, her sister ship was the USS John Hancock. And the John Hancock became the Ticonderoga, and the original Ticonderoga became the Hancock.
Why was that?
I don't know. That's the story. Somehow they got the names were given out of place or something like that. Story has it, you know. So when I did get aboard ship, my brother had been there for 3 years already, so he knew everybody on the ship, including the HR personnel. So I had my choice as to what I wanted to do aboard ship. So it was a matter of being a boatswain's mate, shipping paint or cleaning up the ship, or becoming a ship serviceman. Ship serviceman SH3 consisted of the laundry, 7 stores aboard ship, candy store, barber, bookstore, clothing store, and toiletry store. And so he says, yeah, take that, you know. So the barber shop was also included. So that's where I started my naval career. Okay.
When was this?
This was in September 1970. Okay. And ironic enough, I got aboard ship on a Thursday, and the ship left for Hawaii on Monday. And we were doing exercises off the coast of Pearl Harbor with New Zealand, Australia, and Canada.
Okay. What was that like?
That was pretty exciting. It was we're doing just war games out in the Pacific as allied exercises. Amazing thing is watching the jets. The first time I saw the jet take off and land aboard them.
So what was that like?
Oh, it was exciting. I mean, you just don't know how these pilots do it. It was just amazing. Under waves of 14 and 15 foot high. And these, you know, if you ever seen the movie Top Gun, it was pretty similar to that. So.
Okay. So your first responsibilities were the Ticonderoga were as?
They assigned me to the, what they called the Geedunk, which is actually the candy and soda pop store. And it was open 11 hours a day. And I was in it 11 hours a day. That's so all shifts of men could come down and get a snack, candy bars, ice cream, soda pop, and things like that. Okay. And it was a source of income for the ship, you know. So. And then I told the division officer I didn't want to pump cokes for my naval career, so I wanted to become a barber. And he had told me, you have to make rank. You have to make rate to become a barber, Curly. So I did. I worked hard, I passed the test, and became a barber.
When was that?
Oh, that must have been 6 months after I'd been aboard ship.
Now, how long were you aboard the ship at any one stretch of time?
Well, when we left for our first Vietnam cruise in 71, we left for 9 months at a time.
So you were on the ship for 9 months?
Yes, we were out at sea for 5 months. Then we'd go in for R&R. We'd go to Longapo City in the Philippines to refuel and a few days off. And then we'd go back out while the jets, you know, would fly off and bomb and have MiG fights with Russian MiGs. It was pretty exciting. At night, you could hear the bombs rumbling.
Oh, you were that close to shore?
Oh, sure. You can see the flashes. It was pretty interesting.
Now, what was it like? I've heard stories of first-timers crossing the equator?
Yes, it's what they call the polywogs versus the shellbacks.
Okay, tell us about that.
it was fun. It was, if you haven't been across the equator, you're called a polywog, and there's an initiation that goes on once you do for the first time, where from the time you get up in the morning, the time all the festivities are over. It's probably about an 8-hour ordeal where they walk you around the ship on a chain like you're a dog. And all the shellback is something who's crossed already. They would cut 3-foot hoses and beat all the shellbacks on the behind all day long. And once we were up on the flight deck, we had different stops we had to make along the way. We had to kiss the boatswain's mate belly, which consisted of about a 400-pound chief with a huge beer belly, with a stomach full of black axle grease. he would grab our head and just smother our face in his stomach. Then we bobbed for hot dogs in the toilets. And then we go to the Royal Barber and he take a clump of our hair and cut it off. They would save the garbage 2 weeks prior to the crossing. They would save up all the garbage, the beans and the potatoes and the scraps, and put them in, tunnels. Tunnels like a hamster would walk through, but human size. And it'd be all full of this garbage, and all of us polywogs had to crawl through these tunnels into this garbage and get beat all the time we're doing it. So I had a ton of pictures, but I can't find them. But once it's all over and you jump into a swimming pool with water and shark repellent, and you never smelled anything like shark repellent in your whole life. So once the ceremony was over, you jump into the shark repellent to clean yourself off, and you take all your clothes off, you throw them over the side, and you walk off the ship. And then you're congratulated by the rest of the shell bags. So it was about an 8-hour deal, and then that was during Apollo 16 recovery. Then when we got back from Vietnam, we went on Apollo 17 recovery, and now I was a shell bag. It was my turn. So that's the story of the equator.
Now, was this like both officers and
crew? Everybody. You didn't have to.
But everyone did go
through. No.
No?
No. There are those that refused to participate. But yeah, the officers went through it, the chiefs went through it. There's no rank in the ceremony.
Okay, so for that first cruise that you went to Vietnam, how long were you off the coast of Vietnam in total, do you know?
Well, we were probably out there, probably 4 months at a time.
Okay.
But it was nice. We had 6 guided missile destroyers around us, as we were there.
And what were they for?
Well, they were to protect us against any kind of air attack or submarine attack. We were a CVS, which is sonar. So when we're not in battle, we look for submarines. But when we're in battle, where CVA stands for attack, that's when the jets come forth, F-4s and F-8s.
Okay.
So then you've heard of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Once we left Vietnam, we went to the Gulf of Tonkin during that crisis.
Okay.
And that was pretty exciting. We didn't know what we would encounter there, Russian subs or what have you.
Okay.
No incidents either.
Now, did you have much of a chance to watch the flight operations of the carrier while you were
there? Oh, all the time. When we weren't on duty, I went up there quite a bit. And I was no more than 25 to 50 feet away from the jets taking off. You'd have to wear ear gear because the noise was so loud. But I've seen one crash.
What was that like?
Well, there's a time where all officers, pilots, have to go on what they call carrier quals. That's when the pilots have to have so many carrier landings to qualify to land on a carrier.
Yeah.
And we would go out to sea 2 weeks at a time off the coast of San Diego to get them qualified. And many of them would run out of gas and have to go land on shore to refuel. And there was just one incident. Well, when they land, they hit there's 4 cables that the hook on the jet have to catch. And most of them would hit the 3rd and 4th cable. And once you hit the cable, you have to gun the engine and shut down right away. Because if you miss the cable, you have to gun the engine to take off again. But if you get the cable, you have to shut down right away. So there was one pilot that caught the cable but didn't shut down. So he took the plane up with the cable and come crashing back down on the deck. Cracked the jet in half.
What happened to the pilot?
No, he was fine. He only might have went off the ground 10, 12 feet, but he still come down and broke the jet in half. So that was a fiasco that day. Then we had a couple of men overboard.
How does that happen?
The wind will blow them off. Well, they're fooling around or something. Okay. And both times we found them.
Is there a whole drill when there's a man overboard?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Everyone reports to their quarters and be accounted for. They try to figure out who's missing. And they have to turn the ship around, which takes a long time being a ship. But they do send up the helicopters. And he had a helicopter crash.
Ooh. What happened with that?
He was hovering near the ship, and he crashed in the water. Just went straight down. And pilot men are pretty bad shape. I saw him bring them down to the medics, and they were pretty bad shape. But they survived.
So what was life like aboard an aircraft carrier for you? You worked like 11 hours, 12 hours a day?
Well, it depends on what you did. I did that when I was serving in the Gita. Once I become a barber, we had barber's hours. Out at sea, we're open, you know, from like 8 in the morning after breakfast till about 8 in the evening. The barber shop was our division's lounge also. The TV was in there. So anybody who wanted to watch TV after hours would go in the barber shop. And what's nice about being a barber is get perks. See, when you've got the cooks and you've got the HR people that need a haircut after hours, they come see me, and I take care of them. So when I need a perk, I go to the head of line in the mess hall, or maybe get a few dead days off from HR. So it was like anything else, politics as usual, you know.
Well, what would you do with your days off on board ship?
You never had a day off aboard ship when you're out at sea. You had, when you were in port, you had your 40-hour week. And then when you had duty for 24 hours. You had to stay on for 24 hours. So it was, when we were in port, it was like a job. We were out at sea, it was like a job. Find things to do after hours, play cards. A lot of card playing. Hearts, spades, poker. No.
Now, some of the pictures you have here are of them resupplying the ship at sea. What was that procedure like?
Well, when an aircraft carrier is replenished out at sea, there's probably about, and I had aerial views of all the ships involved. There's a refueling ship, which brings on the fuel. There's a munition ship that brings on the bombs and what have you. There's food supply ship. There's refrigerator ships that bring on. So if you saw it from the air, it would be like the aircraft carrier would be in the middle and all these other supply ships would be surrounding it, just bringing, they call them, what do they call them?
Breeches buoy?
Yeah, the ship stores is what they call them. They brought in the meat and the candy or whatever.
Now, how would they get it from ship to ship?
Helicopter or rope.
They just, like, swing a rope between two ships?
Well, like when they refuel, they would throw the monkey's fist.
Okay, what's
monkey's
that?
Monkey's fist is a rope tied in numerous knots where it's attached to a smaller rope where we throw it, or not throw it, shot out of like an air gun across to the other ship. And then the other ship would take the smaller rope, be attached to the hoses for the fuel, and they would pull it in. Because you couldn't throw the 8-inch, you know, fueling hose.
Right.
So that you'd throw the rope with the monkey's fist, and they would drag it over. So it was kind of interesting that way. It had to be precise, because many times you come close, the large waves, they come real close to the ship, and so the captain had to keep it close, but not too close.
No. What was the weather like while you were out there?
Some days it was 12 to 14 foot waves. Other days it was like glass. So it was when it was like glass, it was really hot. No wind.
Was the ship air conditioned?
Yes, the compartments were air conditioned. Yes.
Not like World War II.
No, no. Of course, the ship was 1945, so it was in World War II. They might have added the air conditioning later, I don't know. Okay. But the second Apollo 17, when we went, when I was a shellback at that time, unfortunately, there weren't that many shellbacks. I mean, polywogs. But I got my licks in. Well, on that, we were aboard that ship. Eugene Cernan was on that mission. And he is from Bellwood, as I was. And he graduated from Proviso East right here in Maywood. So did I. So when the ship was recovered, the hangar bay had a cake-cutting ceremony. And as they were cutting this cake, to it was a beautiful cake that the bakers made. Eugene Cernan was cutting the cake, and I yelled out, "Bellwood says hi." And he looked up, and he was really surprised. I said, "Who said that?" And I just waved to him. So after he cut the first piece of cake, he says, "Where's that kid from Bellwood?" And then I got presented the first piece of cake. I got a picture of that somewhere. Can't find it, though. But we talked for a while. Talked about home and talked about school. So that was really exciting.
Now, when you were cruising off Vietnam, you mentioned about getting shore leave occasionally. Where would that be?
Well, Philippines had a large base along Apo City. Subic Bay was the name of the base. And we'd go there. They'd dock. We'd get off for a couple days off. And then just relax for 2 days.
What was the Philippines like?
Philippines were, when we were there in 1972 is when Ferdinand Marcos made it martial law. So there was a time you could be out all night long, you know, partying, drinking, or just sightseeing, what have you. But once he, you know, declared martial law, you'd have to be off the streets at 1 o'clock. And he patrolled the streets with soldiers with German shepherds and made sure everyone was off the streets at 1 o'clock. So people were nice. You know, I went to Manila, saw Manila. It was different. From there, we went on to, I'm jumping around on my naval career here, but
that's all right.
From there, we went on to Singapore, visited there, and Sasebo, Japan.
And this is all while the ship was off Vietnam, its first cruise?
Yeah, yes. And we went back. The second Vietnam cruise wasn't as long. Okay. We were only there for 4 months, because by that time, it was winding down. And I think Nixon had already, it was 74 was the end of the war.
For U.S. involvement?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, so it was winding down, so we only stayed for 4 months that time.
Now, by then, were you the ship's barber?
Well, I was. There was 6 barbers. Okay. There was the cruise barbers. They had a barber shop with 4 barbers. They had a chief's barber and an officer's barber.
And which one were you?
Well, I started off as the crews, and then I made it up to the chiefs. And then I cut hair for about 2 months for the officers.
Now, did you get to meet a lot of the air crew?
All the time. I'd put up an appointment board, and they'd have to sign, make appointments for their hair.
Now, what were they like?
Young, sassy captains and lieutenants, and just love flying. These guys had some stories, some really exciting stories.
Do you remember some of those?
No, they just encountering the Russian MiGs. You know, they talk about it, and they talk about, sadly, a couple of our guys got shot down over that period of we were over there. And just excitement of flying, they said, you know. Enjoyed that. And once I left the barbershop, I went to the ship stores. I was in charge of collecting all the cash out of all the cash registers, balancing the cash registers, and turning the money into dispersing. And that kind of...
That's a big job for a young kid.
Well, it was, wasn't hard. Wasn't too hard. The cigarette store made a lot of money. They had a cigarette store, the toiletry store, and the clothing store. And the laundry. Laundry was the worst. Hot. Never did the laundry. Never did the laundry. But once I... So my last duties aboard ship in right around July of 73, I was in charge of the luxury store where I would sell. We sold stereos, we sold lighters, watches, rings, cassettes, and boom boxes. Anything you wanted in that store, you could have got at a shopping mall. So it's a... So I got my business experience.
So after the Ticonderoga was through serving off of Vietnam, it recovered three different space missions?
Yeah, the first mission was Apollo 16. Okay. The second mission was Apollo 17, which was the last of the Apollo missions. And then the third one was Skylab 1. And that was right off the coast of San Diego. So it was old hat by then. It was no big deal. But when the Skylab came back, it was raining and foggy, so we couldn't see very much.
How about the two Apollo ones? Were you able to see much?
Oh, yeah. The two Apollo ones were as clear as the sky was blue. It was really, really calm. And when the capsule came floating down with three huge red parachutes, it was just a sight to behold. You know, it was just floated out of the air right there. It looked like it was going to land on the ship, but it was really a mile away. And then our helicopters would go out and pick them out of the water. Then they had the band playing when they brought them aboard ship. And they were all up there in our dress whites and congratulating them.
Now, there were three astronauts on each mission?
There were three astronauts on each mission. I don't remember the names. Aldrin, Buzz Aldrin. Eugene Cernan, Duke. It's only three I can remember.
Now, did you get to meet any of the other astronauts aside from Eugene Cernan?
No, but I did meet the admiral.
No, which admiral was this?
I don't remember.
He was an admiral, though.
Our Captain Boyd is when I first got aboard ship. Captain Boyd was our captain, and he later. When he retired, they made him an admiral, and he had cancer, and we buried him out at sea, which was, you know, it's pretty sad, but it was pretty cool, you know.
What was that like, the ceremony?
Well, everyone didn't have to go, but everyone was in the flight deck, and they'd line up, they'd have the gun, the 21-gun salute, and the flag-covered... metal casket, being metal, would be put on like an aluminum table with a forecastle full of rock. So when they did bury him, they just lifted up and he slid right down the chute, and he would sink to the bottom. Bury two people out at sea. One was a first class petty officer, plus Admiral Boyd. And our second captain, his name was Green, Captain Green.
So what were your officers like?
Well, our officer, our division officer, his name was Caskey, Officer Caskey. He was a junior lieutenant, just like a boot camp officer, right out of ROTC or right out of college, you know. He came in gung ho, you know. We're all old salt by then, you know. Turned out to be a pretty nice guy, though.
Yeah, so. How about your shipmates? What were they like?
Well, the shipmates were from all walks of life, from the south, the north, the west, And guys from Alabama, guys from Ohio, all different accents, and just a good bunch of guys. And at that time, there was a lot of racial tension in the not only in the United States, but aboard ships. As a matter of fact, the USS Coral Sea had a lot of race riots. But for some reason, Ticonderoga, we all got along real well. Never had problems with the racial problems.
Was that because of the officers that you had?
It could have been. Just seemed to get along okay. Food wasn't too bad.
What was that like?
Well, aboard an aircraft carrier, if you want eggs, you're getting powdered eggs. You know, because they make them for so many people, you don't get to order your breakfast. They had oatmeal, they had pancakes, they had eggs, and milk, coffee. Thanksgiving, they put out a huge spread, just as if you're at home with a turkey dinner. But they had a midnight snack line where you could go 10 o'clock at night and just make yourself hot dogs and stuff.
Are these the mid-rats?
Exactly right. Thanks, I forgot about that. Mid-rats. And you may think it's gross, but when we walked down the line to put mustard and ketchup on our hot dog, the containers would be lined with cockroaches. The ship was infested with cockroaches. All ships are infested with cockroaches. They come in with the stores in the boxes, in the crates. And you'd open up your locker to change your clothes and they'd scatter.
Now, back then, were you able to have much communication with folks back home, mail-wise?
Mail call. Just normal mail.
Would you ever get, like, care packages from your parents?
Cookies all the time, yeah. Mom would make cookies. And
they were still okay after?
They'd be broken up and stuff, but everybody shared what they got with whoever they wanted to share them with. And when we were out to sea, we got the, talk with our loved ones from the ship, via the radio. So that was kind of cool. Yeah.
So you finished up your career in 1973?
1973, the ship was decommissioned. As a matter of fact, as I was getting processed out, the ship was being decommissioned. So they were taking out the beds and the tables and started chipping away, getting ready for the graveyard.
Now, was this ship, it was built during World War II, was it hit by a kamikaze during World War II?
I think the Hancock was. Okay. I'm not quite sure if we were. But I think the USS John Hancock was hit by a kamikaze. Of course, I could be wrong.
Was there any kind of a memorial or anything on the ship?
No.
Describing what it was, why it was named that?
No, I believe it was named after a fort, Fort Ticonderoga. Most carriers were named after different battles. So I guess it was the Battle of the Fort Ticonderoga. Okay.
During the Revolutionary War.
They must have changed that later because it was a John F. Kennedy, which was a carrier, and the Nimitz started naming them after presidents and admirals and things.
So you mustered out in 1973. Now, what was that like, getting out of the service?
Well, about 3 months before you're out, you let everyone know that you're getting out because everybody can't wait to get out. And then when you're getting out in 3 months, there's still guys aboard ship that have 3 years. And so we used to make necklaces out of pop tops. And we'd start with 90 of them, and each day we'd take one off. So when we got down to 30 days and 15 days, this necklace would shrink and rattle it, in front of all the people that still had a lot of time left. They were jealous, so. But it was quite an experience, and I'm glad I did it. It's fun being aboard ship with my brother, too. Because I shared a year with him, together.
Yeah. So where were you actually mustered out of the Navy?
San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah, all the orders and the papers were processed right on the ship.
Now, when you got home from San Diego, what was that like?
Oh, it was a relief, you know. When I went in, I had a job at Sears Roebuck, and they offered me my job back with, you know, with my raises and things like that, with seniority. So I had a job waiting for me. I thought that's what I wanted to do. And so I went back working in my old job, Sears.
Did your parents have any kind of a welcome home party? Or?
Well, yeah, when we were in Nam, they had the two stars in the window. Because Dennis and I were both in Vietnam that first time, you know, together. So she had the two-star flag in the window. So that was kind of cool to see when I came home. And then we used to surprise them. We'd come home on leave. We wouldn't tell them. So we'd come walking up and surprise them. You know, so that was kind of exciting. Well, they knew I was getting out, so they picked me up at the airport. And it was...
Now, how have your wartime experiences affected your life?
Well, I think when I went in, I was right out of high school. I was immature, of course, 18 years old. Came out when I was 21. I picked up, could have been a barber, could have worked retail. So I picked up some business skills as far as inventories, taking inventory, working a cash register, just running a store. And you ran your store like it was yours. When you were short on inventory, you would report to your chief saying, okay, I'm out of this, I'm out of this. And then we were inventoried about once a quarter, just like you would if you were in a department store. And if you were over, you were over. If you were short, you were let known you were short, you know. So I learned a lot balancing cash registers and collecting money out of vending machines. Nothing, no rocket science, but...
Still useful.
Street smarts, you know. Everyday things that you might want to know. Matured, make you a man, you know.
All right. Thank you very much for sharing your memories with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.